The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
I've been reflecting just really most of this week a good bit on a conversation that I had with someone on Tuesday of this week, and I was meeting with an individual, and this is what they said to me. They said, Terry, it is so good to be back gathering together, worshiping together again. Aren't you glad we are back together? That's how they began the conversation. And my response was, yeah, but it's just awkward. It doesn't feel the same. And for some reason, I haven't been able to stop thinking about that conversation all week long. The individual that I was speaking with did not express his excitement based on one single stipulation. Man, I am just glad to be back together, aren't you? My response completely ignored the excitement and longing of my brother. I traded his joy for my lack of. I chose not to rejoice in his joy because at the moment, my preference seemed to be much more important. Much more important than just simply being together. Being in God's presence with you. I think it's easy to do, right? To make our preferences, our opinions, even our perceptions, it's easy to make the point of our gathering together about us. Right? To make the good or not good of gathering based on stipulations when in reality, none of them really matter. Indoor, outdoor. Music, no music. Full band, one person. More singing, less singing. Or more singing, less preaching. More liturgy, less liturgy. Kids programs, no Summit Kids. Mask, no mask, this preacher, that preaching style, this group of people, that group of people. It's really easy to make the gathering of the body, whether that be corporately or whether that be in life groups and community groups, it's really easy to make it about us. Then I read 1 John this week. I read 1 John chapter 3 in particular. See what kind of love the Father has given to us that we should be called children of God, and so we are. And I thought that it was like this conversation that I had was at the forefront of my mind. I was reading 1 John 3, and it was like the Spirit of God just crushed me in the best possible way. What if our desire to be here this morning was based on the sheer fact that God has come to us and made us his own? That we are dearly beloved children of God, and we get to gather together as brothers and sisters who are loved deeply by the Father. What if it was his love that served as the unifying motivation to be in the room today, regardless of what the hour is going to look like? What if it was that reality? What if we had a unified group of men and women and families that said, you know what, I want to acknowledge that I am deeply loved by the Father, and I want to gather together with other people who want to be reminded of that truth. I think at that point, preferences fade to the background. Then I read verse 11 of 1 John 3, "For this is the message that you have heard from the very beginning, that we should love one another. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. Whoever does not love abides in death. Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. This passage crushed me this week. And you go, well, your response seems, I mean, it doesn't seem that, your response to this individual doesn't seem that selfish, doesn't seem that abrasive, too brash, but everything underneath it was incredibly selfish. And once I recognized the selfishness of my statement to this brother, here's what I saw. I saw how important being together was for him. I could sense how crucial it was for him to be in the presence of others who have expressed their love, not only to God, but to him. You see, love is actionable. Love is tangible. Love demands presence. So I say to you, like, what if our love for one another was the unifying motivation to be in the room? That's the thing that I've been sitting in this week. Regardless of who's up here and what this looks like, regardless of who stands here and expounds upon Scripture, regardless of what it looks like and what we're doing liturgically, what if our love for one another was willing to go past the preference, the opinions, the disagreements, and be together? Because here's the thing, if we strip it all away, I've thought a lot about our brothers and sisters in the East, our brothers and sisters who are heavily persecuted, who don't have the freedoms that we have. I've thought a lot about them. Who take extreme measures to just be around other men and women who belong to the Father. But if we strip it all away, your opinions and my opinions and your preferences and my preferences, what do we really have? Love. And listen, before you tune me out, I'm not talking about sentimental love. I'm not talking about let's just all get along love. Let's hold hands, sing kumbaya love. That's not what I'm talking about. We are bound together by His love. We're bound together in the love of the Father. Therefore, the very thing that we have to offer to one another is the one thing we most long for. That is love. Under all the pretense, under all the preferences, under every single stipulation, what do we really want? What do we really have? It's love. And so I want to take a few moments and look at John 15, a portion of John 15, and I want to look at what Jesus has to say about love. Specifically, how does His love inform and empower our love for one another? And so here's the core truth that I want to put before you. God's people are marked by love. That's what we've been talking about. God's people are marked by humility, by joy, by unity, by love. And here's how I want to define love for us today. Love is a decisive act for the benefit of someone else, no matter how you feel about that person. Love is a decisive action. It's a decision for the benefit of someone else, regardless of how you feel about that person. Little context of John 15 before we get to verse 12. Jesus is telling us in this passage, be careful where you abide. Be careful which vine you are attaching yourself to. Because we're abiding somewhere. We're abiding in someone, in something. So be really careful where that is, who that is, because where you abide, that is what you will become. That's what you'll produce. what you and I are becoming is always traced back to what we choose to attach ourselves to. And here in John 15, Jesus says, abide in me. Remain in my love. Attach yourself to me. Live every day of your life from the reality that God loves you, and his promise, if we abide in his love, his promise is he will change us, he'll transform us, we'll bear fruit. That's the picture that he gives us in John 15. He's calling us to attach ourselves to a love that is transforming. But what he's going to tell us in this passage, it's not just a personal transformation, it's communal transformation. It's not just him changing us individually, it's him changing and transforming us collectively. So look back at verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Some translations will say this is a new commandment, which is an interesting statement, because John 15 is a part of a larger dialogue that Jesus is having with his disciples. It's the upper room discourse. And so John 13, even to the point that we're at now in John 15, is really part of one singular dialogue that Jesus is having with his disciples as he is approaching his final hours here on earth. And you know what Jesus does in John 13? He begins the conversation talking about love. And he's going to bookend the conversation talking about the same thing that he began the conversation with, love. He says, you are loved so that you might demonstrate that love to one another. But this commandment isn't new. And the reason why some translations put it that way, the idea that Jesus is getting at here with his disciples is that he is literally redefining love. Look at the next verse. This is how he's redefining it. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. I love this verse. I don't know about you, but I feel the weight of these four verses, John 15, 12, 13, 14, and 15. I mean, what a remarkable truth. Jesus has laid down his life for his friends. But I also feel the weight of this, to love you as Christ loved me. Jesus shows us his love by laying down his life for us, and then he calls us to do the same for one another. To remind us, I think, of this thought is pretty important. He's not talking about a general love. He's talking about a specific kind of love within the fellowship. He's not talking about how we love strangers who are perhaps outside of the faith. Now, the scriptures are full of commendation to us of loving the unbeliever, how we love, how we show compassion, how we move towards. But John in particular, especially as he writes his letters in 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, he is talking about our love among the fellowship, a localized group of people who gather together, who belong to one another. So he's talking about the way we love as the gathered people. Now look at the language Jesus uses to describe the relationship that he has with the disciples. Verse 15, no longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. Now, again, important to the understanding of what Jesus is saying is to keep in mind the point of the conversation that he's having. It begins in chapter 13. It's a very personal and intimate conversation, and he's preparing them for two things. One, his physical departure from this earth. I'm leaving. My physical presence is leaving. I'm sending a helper, I'm sending the Spirit, and because I'm sending the Spirit, you're going to do greater works than you've even seen. as you walk with me physically upon this earth. So he's preparing them, one, for that. Two, he's preparing them for the mission that God is going to fulfill on the earth, that God is going to advance his kingdom, and they, as his beloved ones, are going to partner with him in the renewal of all things. So as you read this notion of love and being loved, so that you are called to love, here's what he's essentially telling them. Hey, look, guys, my love for you is centered upon God, his glory, his mission, and out of that love, out of God's purposeful rescuing and redeeming love towards you, I'm calling you to love. Maybe I could say it this way. He's calling us into ordinary yet meaningful relationships that are centered around the mission of God and are empowered by the love of Jesus. That's what I'm calling you to. I'm calling you to love. Now, let's wait a moment. Because this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. How can we be commanded to love? Is that not strange to you? Hey, love. Just love. Sounds forced. Feels like work, feels manufactured. I thought love was a feeling. I'm supposed to feel love, right? How can I love you if I don't feel love towards you? If you annoy me, if we don't have anything in common, naturally, how am I supposed to love you? Well, notice something profound in the passage. The command in verse 12 to love is bookended within this paragraph down in verse 17. So let's look at it. Verse 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Verse 17, these things I command you so that you will love one another. Same command, same word, same emphasis. He begins his thought, ends his thought with the same imperative. But these two verses are actually linked back to the original command to love in verse number 9. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Here's the command: abide in my love. You want to know how we can be commanded to love? Because our love for one another is the very fruit of abiding in the love of Jesus. It's the overflow. It's the outcome. 1 John 3 is going to say the evidence. It was on the screen, 1 John 3 and 4. The evidence that you know you are a children of the light is your love. His love in us, working through us for one another. Our response to the command of verse 12 is inseparably linked to our posture of four words: abide in my love. Maybe I could put it this way. Our struggle to love one another has more to do with our wrestle to be loved by God than it has to do with the ease or difficulty of loving other people. Every single refusal to love, to care, to nurture, to forgive, to extend grace and compassion begins and ends with our posture of four words: abide in my love. You see, from Jesus' point of view, love isn't based upon or motivated by a feeling. It isn't based on emotion. Love is a decision. Love is a decisive act for the benefit of someone else, no matter who that someone else is, no matter how you feel towards that someone else. And the reason that is so is because our decisive yes to love one another is the very fruit of abiding in the love of Jesus. So What does that look like for us as a congregation? What does that mean for us here at Summit? Summit Easily. I think we tend to generalize love. Let's just try to be honest with ourselves. It's easier to love the stranger who doesn't belong here because we don't have to be vulnerable with the stranger, right? It's easier to love the stranger who doesn't belong here, doesn't rub shoulders with us, who doesn't really know us, who doesn't know the good, the bad, the neutral, because we don't have to really be real with them. I think that's why so many people struggle with the idea of biblical community, because the moment we get found out, or the moment we get too close to finding out who other people are, we're out. I'm out. You're out. And what becomes the driving motivation at that point is preference and opinions and stipulations and, oh, that's too hard, that's too difficult, that's too messy. I don't want anything to do with that. I'll go back into my own little spiritual huddle and I'll grab my people. That's who I'll love. I think we tend to simplify love because we want love to be easy. But love isn't easy. It's hard to love people. It's hard to love people we're in the long haul with, yeah? It's hard to love people that we just fundamentally disagree with. You can say amen to that. It's true. It's hard to love the same people year after year after year after year. It's hard to love people that just don't get it. It's hard to love people who just keep messing up in the same way. It's hard to love people who give us nothing back. Can I be honest? I mean, every time I say that statement, it's like, well, are you expecting me not to be honest? I want to be honest with us as a community. The reality for us at Summit Easily is this. It's not if we disagree, it's when we disagree. It's not if we hurt one another, it's when we hurt one another. It's not if we get on each other's nerves, but when. It's not if you dislike a decision we made as a leadership team, it's when. It's not if someone says something hurtful or too brash in life group, it's when. It's not if we disagree on politics, but when we disagree on politics. It's not if we disagree on certain elements of theology or methodology or strategy, it's when we disagree. It's not if we disagree on how we should have responded to the pandemic, it's when. It's not if we disagree on how we should live as believers in America during an incredibly divisive and polarizing season, it's when. It's not if we never have the feeling of wanting to walk away from belonging to the same community year after year, it's when. Brothers and sisters, Jesus does not call us to easy love. He calls you to abide in His love, and the fruit of that love is you will love one another. That's what He calls us to. Fruit. That's the image I want to just leave us with thinking about this morning. Fruit. The fruit that He produces, and the imagery of the branch tethered to the vine, is He produces the fruit. He produces the good. He produces the vitality. He produces the endurance. He produces the persevering love. Jesus says, the fruit doesn't make the tree alive. The fruit reveals that the tree is indeed alive. So if the fruit is bad, if it's hate, if it's disregard of someone, if it's indifference towards others, if it's the gossip, the slander, the jealousy, the envy, if the fruit is bad, the tree is bad. But if the tree is indeed alive, the fruit will be good. And no one has to guess, well, what does good fruit look like? He tells us love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That is the good fruit tethered to the good tree. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. I'll take it a step further. Jesus says the way that this is modeled, the way that you and I, we collectively know if one another has good fruit is in how we treat one another. That's how we know. How do I know that my wife has good fruit? How do I know that Ashley has good fruit? I observe the way she loves. That's what he says. How do you know if someone loves and has joy and has peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control? You observe the way they love. Their treatment of people, regardless of how they feel about those people. I'm going to invite Doug and Beth come back out, and we're actually going to sing together. I'm going to invite you to sing together if you feel comfortable doing that. If you don't, I understand right now. Let me say this. It's really easy to love when we get to define who it is that we love. Let me say that one more time. It is really easy to love when we get to define who it is that we love. It's really easy to love when we get to define what that love looks like. And in the kingdom of God, neither stipulation is up to us. There's no stipulation of who we love and how we love that is up to you and I to define. You know what I mean, right? When we create our own huddles, our own self-made circles of spirituality. Well, I like this person and this person and this person, and they look like most what I want to become. They agree with my thoughts of theology and American culture. Yep, that's who I'll make room for at my table. That's who I'll invite into my circle. That's who I'll create margin to be around. And I just want to, I say this is, I have friends that I love being around because we have things in common that are outside of spiritual things. I'm not downplaying that in any of the least. But everything that I just described, I want you to know this, that's easy love that does not require the work of the Spirit. It is nothing for me to look at certain people and go, that's who I want to be around. That's who I'm going to love. That's who I'm going to create margin for. I can do all of that in my own strength, in my own wisdom, in my own desire and emotion. I can do all of that for me. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our life for one another. Abide in my love, and you will love one another. May it be so. Father, I pray that these truths would fall on good soil today. Be reminded of 1 John 3:1, how good it is to be loved by you. That you would come to us and call us your own. I love the phrasing of how John even puts an exclamation point. We are called children of God, and so we are. Oh, to have a unifying motivation to be together, to love one another, because we have been loved. We are loved perfectly by the Father. I pray as we sing now, have the opportunity to proclaim with our own voices the deep, deep love of the Father. Would you continue to do a work in us, reminding us of what we've been called to do as we abide in your love? Would you stand? Would you stand with me, with us? Let's sing this together.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Update's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.